The following was originally broadcast on Northumberland 89.7 FM. For more podcasts and learn more about us, go to northumberland897.ca. And thank you for downloading this podcast.
Show for and about women in our community. I'm your host, Maria Papayawanu-Duick, and as always, it is my privilege to be here with you every Monday evening. Whether you're tuning in on your late drive home, taking a break from working, or winding down after a long day, I am grateful for giving me this hour of your life. So sit back, relax, and let's enjoy our evening together. In the spirit of truth and reconciliation, we acknowledge that we are on the treaty territory of the Michi-Sagig of Alderville First Nation and the traditional territory of the Wendat Nation. We recognize the endearing presence of all First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples, and those from other nations who have chosen this territory as their home. Northumberland County also includes Indigenous peoples who are residential school survivors, day school survivors, and their descendants. We recognize the ongoing impacts of colonialism, and we encourage you to look to Indigenous peoples for education and awareness. Building relationships is a commitment to furthering truth and reconciliation. Hello, everybody. It's me, Maria Papayawanu-Duick, and it is May. It is May, and it is feels like it's minus zero. You can make some ice cubes outside. Where is the sunshine? And I just peaked my levels. So, guys, this is how frustrating I am that it's May and it's cold. I actually got dressed this morning, put on a t-shirt, and then went outside, and then I went back inside and put on a sweatshirt because that's the way it is. But welcome, everybody, to the May 1st show. A little bit of housekeeping before I start. We are having a Vanderpump Rules live viewing party of the reunion. Now, if you are a Bravo fan and watch any of their reality show, you understand how important the season finale is one thing, but the reunion. And a couple of things. We're doing this with Jacqueline Pennington, and we are going to have a menu that is curated with themes from the show. So we're, for those of you that have watched Vanderpump, we're having butt steak. So if you've watched the show, you know exactly what that is. And I think that was season 5, right before Tom and Katie's wedding. It will be on June 7th. And we also have a prize pack from Hey You. Yep. Hey You Canada is joining in on the excitement. So head over to my Instagram page at Northumberland Women, and click on the link tree. And in there, you'll be directed to the tickets. Tickets are $25. However, all the money that is made from this event will be distributed amongst LGBTQ charities, registered charities in our community, because we all know how important the LGBTQ community is. Well, not only to everybody, but also to Lisa Vanderpump, who is the star and executive producer of the show. Now, enough of my plug. We're here going to be talking. We're kind of doing another little plug here. Today, I have with me Celia. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Celia McBride. And, you know, Celia did something that I think so many of us kind of think about in the back of our heads and we dream about, telling our story, writing it, putting a pen to paper, and publishing a book. And she did that. She published her memoir. And I like being honest and transparent. I got through half of it, not because it's not good, just because time kind of got over me. But while I was reading the book, because we're about the same age, I was imagining what I was doing at that time. So we're going to go through that a little bit. Mm-hmm. However, for those of you that don't know, Celia is an accomplished writer, performer, and spiritual director. She is a playwright and has written and produced across Canada at the Stratford Festival of Canada, as well as in the US and abroad. She is originally from the Yukon, but has been living in Port Hope on and off since she was a child. So Celia, let's just get into it. Welcome. And
thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Let's get you a little bit closer to the mic and we're good. I'm really loud.
Okay,
we're good. You're good.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Oh my God.
To talk to you.
I love the book. Oh my God.
That is the title.
And okay, so what made you you're an artist. Like, reading through the book and understanding this, art mm-hmm. has always fueled your next step.
Yeah, it has. Yep.
And what made you decide, like, it's a big thing. You're putting yourself out there naked.
Yeah, really. Naked. Here I am, everybody.
Everything. Like, you're very honest and authentic in your writing.
Thank you.
How hard was it? Or did you pull through journals? Or, like, what was that writing process like for you?
Yeah, journals. I used a lot of journals. Like, I've been keeping journals since I was a kid. So I went back and was like, when was that? And, you know, my first draft of the book, actually, it was kind of, I call it like the embryo draft. It's the draft nobody gets to see. That was like 175,000 words. And mm-hmm. I mean, this book, I think, is 65,000. So I literally just wrote, like, I wanted to write about my spiritual journey because I ended up living in a religious community and thinking I wanted to become a nun. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to write every single spiritual experience I ever had in my life. That's how I started. And then, yeah, it was like way too long and I had to cut it way down. And I think I really wanted to share, because I think a lot of us, well, a lot of people are struggling in this world today. And I think a lot of my journey has been about feeling like I don't belong and feeling like we're looking for a place to belong. And so I think a big part of my motivation was actually like, if anyone could read this and feel less alone, then I feel like that's my art for this project, you mm-hmm. know?
Well, I was reading the book and a lot of the stuff, like, I know the high school you went to. I went to the other art school in Scarborough, Wexford.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So you went to the art school
in Etobicoke.
Etobicoke. Yeah. Like, did you audition for Degrassi at that time?
No, I didn't. But we talked about Degrassi all the time.
Well, because there were a lot of kids that went there that were on Degrassi. Yeah. I'm a huge Degrassi
Are
fan.
You?
Yeah.
Yeah. Spike went to ESA. She, mm-hmm. she was in our school.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you know that the creator of Degrassi lives out here?
No, I don't.
In Grafton, Linda really? Schuyler. Yeah. I'm hoping to get her on the show, but I should send her an email one day.
That would be cool.
Yeah, because she was she's pretty bad ASS. We don't swear. We just spell the swear words. So I was reading your book, and it's interesting where you just said a place to belong. And I read it, and I thought, how courageous, because like I was reading the book and I was parallel. As I was reading the book, I was putting my life parallel to yours. Mm. And I would never have had the courage that you have had to be able just to pick things up and go.
Really?
Yeah.
Now you're doing a radio show. It seems like you do have the courage.
I know, but not at 19. Not right. at...
Yeah. Yeah, that adventuresome spirit. I think I must... Like, my parents kind of did that, you know, when they were... When they first got married, they went to Europe. Then they came back and had my sister, and then they went to the Yukon. And then they came back to Toronto, and then they went to Montreal. So they've sort of been like pick up and go mm-hmm. kind of people. And I guess that's where I got it. Because, yeah, when I finished high school, I was like, I don't want to go back to school right away. I don't want to go to university like right away. So I went back to the Yukon, which is where I was born and where I had lived till I was 7. And yeah, I went by myself and went to sort of see what it was like to live alone and get a job.
Yeah, but that was at 19.
Yeah, I actually was 18.
18, okay. Oh, 18. You didn't do OAC?
I did.
Or did you do OAC quickly?
I did OAC quickly.
You were a fast tracker?
I fast tracked. I was like, if I can get out of high school in 4 years, I will do it. And I did it.
And for all of you that don't know what OAC is, it was grade 13 and it was your Ontario Academic Credits.
That's right.
Yeah, OAC. Yeah. You needed six of them to graduate.
Yeah, yeah. So I literally was like, oh, 4 years is an option? Because I didn't feel like I belonged in high school. I did okay at Etobicoke School of the Arts. I sort of found my people in terms of like weird creative teenager kids like I was, but I still didn't. I was like, I got to get out of here. So
You did. You went to the UConn. And it's interesting because you said my parents, they, but all your traveling is I.
Yeah.
I.
Yeah, it's true. I went to the UConn, moved to Montreal, moved to Ireland, moved to Port Hope, moved to England, moved to the UConn. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, and are there, you had like roots here. Your grandparents lived here?
My grandparents retired here. So they bought a farm north of Cobourg, farmhouse, and a bit of land. So we've been coming here since I was a wee thing. Mm-hmm. And one of my aunts moved to Port Hope. So my mother's family was kind of around here. And yeah, so we've been coming and going. When we left the UConn, I was in grade two, and we moved to Port Hope. And because we were going to buy a house in Toronto, but we didn't have one yet. So we stayed with my aunt in Port Hope. I finished grade two at Dr. Powers, which is a school in Port Hope.
Okay.
Which is now an apartment building.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad they've repurposed that for housing.
Yeah, for low income housing too. So,
oh, that's perfect.
It is perfect. We need more of that in this part of the world.
So you're looking at the 90s, the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. You're out there. You're in this field. You're in the entertainment. You are producing. Mm-hmm. You are getting what is that called when they ask you to come there? Residencies.
Yeah, getting residencies. I'm acting. I'm writing. I'm doing shows. I'm making films. I'm making theater. And yeah, I did that I graduated from the National Theater School in 95. And then I would say I kind of retired from theater and film in 2014.
Oh, so, wow, that wasn't too long ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did you retire?
Well, I was moving more into this, and the book tells the story of I was, so I'll try to keep the answer to that question short, but.
No, you use as many words, except do not use 175,000
yeah,
words.
Yeah, exactly.
But use as many words as you need, okay? Don't worry about it.
Okay, well, that answer really starts when I did my yoga teacher's training course. And I felt called to become a Swami. And I was like, oh my God, I have to give up everything and renounce like love and money and everything to live this life. And it turned out, no, I didn't. And I went back to being an artist. But that feeling that I felt, which I would call a calling, didn't leave me. And so I started to do more spiritual experiences. I went on a silent retreat. I got a spiritual director. I started maybe learning how to help others on the spiritual journey. I did a coaching course. I started to try my hand at speaking. I did Toastmasters. And yeah.
Oh, I was the I'm a Toastmaster.
I know you are. I saw that on your website. So I was like winning prizes and Toastmasters and trying to move out of my arts and into maybe speaking and presenting and facilitating. But there was still this spiritual thing happening inside of me. And it really just felt like call, like I was being called to become something. And I didn't know what that was. So then I did a spiritual direction training program to become a spiritual director.
Okay, wait a second. Can we pause? Sorry, yeah. I'm gonna We're going to tangent. What is a spiritual director?
Great question. So when I'm on an airplane and someone asks me that question and we don't have a lot of time, I say it's a therapist for the soul.
Okay.
But I'm not a therapist. I don't train as a therapist. I train as a spiritual director. But a spiritual director is a soul friend. It's someone who listens. It's someone who, if you're looking for meaning in your life, it's someone to talk to about that. If you're struggling with your spiritual life, it's someone to talk to about that. So I listen. I ask evocative questions. I reflect back what I'm hearing. And yeah, I'm a soul companion, I guess.
So, and do you have a web? Like,
yeah.
Website. So you have a website? Okay.
I have clients. I work one-on-one. So I provide spiritual direction in long-term care. I'm a spiritual care provider in long-term care, but I also have, you know, I have trans youth. I work with atheists. I work with anyone who wants to talk to someone about what their life means for an hour and pay for it.
I love it. Okay. What is your website?
CeliaMcBride.com.
So
my first and last name.
CeliaMcBride.com. And you can find Celia on Instagram at Celia McBride. And also you can follow her book, Oh My God, which is good. One of the things, like even just talking now, I didn't even have to read the book to just listening to you here, is that you've had multiple career trajectories. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Multiple career trajectories. Do you think everything is coming together? And it, like you have little pieces of all that, because in the book that mm-hmm. you somehow stumbled upon mm-hmm. helping seniors and yeah. working with seniors and yeah. becoming a PSW somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So exactly. 1990s, 2000, isn't it?
Yeah, really. That doesn't happen now. No training, no certificate. I'll tell you what, where it all feels like it comes together is I've developed workshops and retreats called Being Enough, Soul Care. Mm-hmm. And when you come to one of my retreats, you will see the writer in me, the actor in me, the speaker in me, the spiritual director in me, the dancer in me, all of these parts of me sort of come together, and I offer you an opportunity to, yeah, come alive as a person. We do writing exercises. We do, improv, you know, from my theater background. We do body prayer / dance movement, spiritual discussion. So my retreats are really, that is actually where you see all my career trajectories happening in one place. It's like, okay, that's all one thing.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love it. I love it. And how often do you do your retreats?
Yeah. So since COVID, it's been like really rare, but I'm about to go on a book tour to BC in the Yukon. And I've got retreats in on Vancouver Island and Whitehorse.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And you're going on a book tour? That is so cool.
Self-propelled.
Self-propelled. Yeah, that's the only way to get things done. You got to start it and others will follow. I always say we have to set our standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've had to do that. You know, someone gave this to me. This was at one of my mentors when I was in theater. And I was talking to her about wanting to get my plays produced. And she said, Celia, do you want to be 40 years old begging theater companies to produce your plays, or do you want to build your practice as a theater artist? And I was like, I want to build my practice as a theater artist. So I started to write and direct and act and produce my plays because I didn't know if anybody else was going to. And I made a feature film because nobody else was going to make my feature film. And I published my book because, you know, maybe nobody else was going to. I mean, you can hit your head against a wall trying to get someone else to do your work for you, or you can just do it.
I think that's a good statement, because that's very something that I'm a huge shouter outer pumper upper mm-hmm. of Gen X. Mm. But that's something that we learned growing mm-hmm. up. You do your stuff. Mm-hmm. It's you.
Yeah.
You are going to promote yourself. You are going to move yourself. Like, you know, we're latchkey kids.
We
take care of ourselves. Like our parents, you know, suck it up, buttercup. Like, all these things. Mm-hmm. And so you want to get something done. You do it yourself. You move forward. Like this radio show. I want to have a radio show. I'm just going to do it. I showed up here and said, let's do it.
I
am like so jealous about your book.
Thank you.
So I do have a lot of questions to ask you about writing and then finding an agency. Because I do think you heard about the show through your writer's group, right? Mm-hmm. With Pam.
Yeah.
Because she was one of my first guests, because like, I just thought it was amazing,
that
inspiring that at 70, and I don't want to put a number on it, it's not like 70 is old, but, you know, you're growing up, you keep hearing, oh, you know, you're supposed to retire. But at 70, she just moved forward and told stories.
I think that's brilliant.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a couple of commercials now, and we will be back with Celia McBride here on Northumberland Women. Hello, everybody. Welcome. And truly local radio. It is here with Northumberland Women. We have my guest, author, producer, playwright, movie maker. Did I say actor? Actor, yes. Spiritual director, almost nun.
Yeah, that was close.
Close. Okay. So
it was a close call.
Okay. So, okay. I know I was going to... During the break, I said, okay, we're going to talk about this. But I just want to talk about let's talk about that journey to almost becoming a nun.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like through your book, you talk about like God always being there. You're always kind of looking at scripture. You're doing that. But that's a big leap from, and I, again, guys, I only read half the book. I'm owning this, owning it. But that's a big leap into, I am now going to commit myself to a singular place.
It's a big leap for not even really calling myself a Christian. Like
you're not Catholic.
I'm not anything. I was raised by agnostics. I went looking for religion because I didn't have one. I was very attracted to Christianity and was having mystical experiences. And so really started to kind of explore that path. And I was talking about call earlier and like that call to become a swami or that call to become a monk. When you talk to specifically a Catholic person about call, they're not like, I don't really understand what you mean. They're like, oh, you have a vocation and like this is what you do. And it's like a sort of very clear path. And so it just made sense to try to pursue this question of, am I being called to monastic life through a Catholic path or lens? But I wasn't Catholic, and so that was kind of problematic. And so I had to convert to Catholicism if I wanted to become a Catholic nun. And that was problematic because My personal values around inclusivity when it comes to LGBTQ+ people, women, pro-choice, these things were very difficult for me to kind of sign on to be like a really, really devoted, like go all in Catholic woman. So I struggled. I really, really struggled. But there was something very attractive about monastic life in the Catholic Church. You know, there are some Catholic nuns who call themselves monks, but mostly it would have been like going through the novitiate to become a Catholic sister, a religious sister. And so I went and lived with a religious community in the UK. It was a leap. You're right. Like it was a huge leap. But I truly believed that I was being called to become something. And I could not follow that. And it turns out, you know, everything I was looking for, I already am. That's kind of spoiler alert. But yeah,
that's
in a nutshell.
I know that for me, in my faith, we have nuns from my understanding, it's much more restrictive
yeah.
than it is in the Greek Orthodox mm. faith. Mm. But I do remember that after the monastery opened up at just outside of Toronto, mm. there were a large amount of young women who joined.
Really?
Yeah. And I just remember like thinking, wow, like I couldn't do that.
It takes a lot of courage to do
that. I couldn't not worry about how I looked mm. or mm. shaving my legs or waxing my mustache because I'm Greek, guys. Us Europeans, we sometimes have a little extra facial hair. Yeah. But also not being able to be alone in a room with my dad because I'm no longer his daughter.
Wow.
I belong to God. And so there was this whole thing. But it always blew my mind away is how someone could even, knowing all that, still make that leap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think that pull is much stronger than anything else.
Yeah, it is. It's a powerful, powerful experience. And I think the confusing part about it is, what do I do with this? Like, what actually am I being called to do? And you know, so many of the women that I met in my journey who were religious sisters, who were nuns, a lot of them had become nuns not because they felt that pull toward God, but because there weren't maybe a lot of options for women. It was like, if you didn't get married and you couldn't work because working, you know, was not something that was typical for women, and you lived in a rural town in Ireland, like going to the convent was, you know, your best option, and you'd be taken care of for the rest of your life. So there is this kind of thing about, I truly feel like I need to be married to God, whatever that means. And then there's this, okay, this is like an option for women that, means that you'll be taken care of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Totally. But I understand that part back then, but I don't understand present day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why I believe it's a mystical thing.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, it's just this.
It is a mystical.
I'm just picturing it as this pull. Something's pulling you towards that more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, there are not so many women becoming religious sisters anymore. It's rare. You know, there aren't the church will say there's not a lot of vocations, you know. So,
well, I mean, maybe if the church kind of shook things up and kind of understood the people around. Sorry, we're getting into religion. We can't talk religion. I already talk politics all the time, and now religion. But, you know, I can only speak on the Greek Orthodox. I can't speak on behalf of Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
However, we will change the subject on that part.
Good idea.
Okay, so what is the process of writing a book? Because I am 100% sure out of the five people listening today, five of them.
Thank you, five people.
Thank you, five people. And five of them want to write a book. Like, for me, I love memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
I have read, I learn from everybody's thing. So I've read Kris Jenner, who is the Kardashian mom.
Right, yeah.
However, there's something I learned from her memoir.
Mm.
And I've read the Steve Jobs, the biography, and Prince Harry.
Right.
And then I read just random ones because everybody's story is so unique. But writing it down, like, is there a community group out here? Is there, like, someone out there? Hey, I want to write my story. Where do I start?
Yeah. That's where writing is like a lonely proposition is it, you know, you can go to a writer's group, you can take workshops, you can join a, you know, the Spirit of the Hills writer's group. You can.
Is that a local group?
Yeah, that's a local group. And I belong. But what you have to do is sit down by yourself and write. And I know, you know, being a professional writer that, and having written like 20 something plays and, now a memoir, that voice in the head will talk you out of writing. It will do it. you'll be like, I want to write. And it will tell you a million stories why not to write. And so for me, how to write a book is to sit down in the chair. And if you can't do 1 hour a day, do 15 minutes. If you can't do 15 minutes, do 5 minutes. Now, some people don't have this problem. I read about authors who write 8 hours a day, and I'm like, that's not me. I have to contend with this voice in my head that says, there's a million other things I have to do, and tell it to shut up, and then sit in my chair and put on my timer and do it every day. And if I don't do it, the book doesn't get written, and it just stays as an idea in the head. It stays as a fantasy. It stays as a wish. So sitting down and doing it is what, it's like the most boring instruction, but that's actually, you have to do it that.
Well, you said your first draft was 175,000 words.
Yeah.
Did you edit it down, or did you share it with someone? Because that's scary.
It is
scary. To me, is... You wrote it all down. Like, I mean, kudos, because that's a lot of work.
Thank you.
Like, I'm just thinking I would be doing 5 minutes a day for 500 years.
Well, the book took me 6 years.
Okay. but you wrote all that down. That's everything. And then you have to hand it over to someone.
I did. And so I think, so that was the embryo draft. And then the first draft, you know, I cut. I just went in and I was like, that doesn't need to be there. That doesn't need to be there. I tried to make it, you know, book size. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like 90,000 words maybe. And then I gave it to two people, both whom I trust as having really strong editorial skills, but also said they would be available, like they wanted to do it. And so I gave it to them, and they both gave me really strong feedback that I needed to write the second draft. So then I went back in, and when I went back to 1 hour a day, or 45 minutes a day, or 30 minutes a day, like whatever I had, I did it. And then I wrote the second draft, and I gave it to another person with very strong editorial skills. And she was like, it's good, but there's no real narrative through line. And I was like, okay. So then I went back in and I rewrote to try to find the narrative through line. Like, what is the thing that's going to carry the reader through the book to the end? So they want to keep turning the pages. Did that. Gave it to someone else. Got more feedback. Got it back. Gave it to someone else. It was ready.
Love it. But
perseverance.
That sounds like the hard part, but I don't think that would be the hard part. I think once you get to that point, I think the bigger mountain to climb is getting it published and mm-hmm. getting it into bookstores. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
So are you self-published?
Yeah. So I did what's called hybrid publishing. So there's traditional publishing, which is, you know, somebody like Penguin or Random House decides they want to publish your book. Nowadays, in 2023, getting a traditional publishing deal is almost like trying to get into the NHL, like, mm-hmm. or the Olympics. It's extremely difficult. Self-publishing is you do all the work. Hybrid publishing is you pay someone and they do all the work, but you're still paying for it yourself and essentially doing the market. I'm doing all the marketing. Like, this is part of my promo, right? It's like going online and looking for opportunities.
I know. I love that you
talk
found
to
me.
People. I'm love so that I found you too. That
I'm
was happy. Very cool.
I was just so happy that
I
you
love
found
the way
me.
That happened. So
Wait, I just want to share something.
Yeah.
Because you finding me stroked my ego.
Mm.
Because it just made me like, I'm like, oh my God, someone sees this as value. And
oh,
I
yeah.
was just like, you just added to my confidence. So thank you for that.
That's awesome. I'm so glad. Yeah. And I did I tell you this when we already started on air? I can't remember, but I was listening to one of your episodes and I was like, oh, I'm so excited to be on the show. It sounds so great.
Oh my God. I hope like you're still happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
Like
yeah.
living up to the expectations.
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, I will say yes, the marketing and the promotion. Okay. So then. Get it pay for the Tellwell publishing, get it all done, and then what? Then you have to sell the book. And I have to tell you, Maria, yes, the writing is like one thing and it's hard and persevering, but the marketing, it can be so discouraging. because there's a million books out there. You're self-published, so no one is really advocating for you or interested. Like, you're trying to get, I'm trying to get interviews and reviews, and there's 7 gazillion self-published books every single day coming out.
Yeah.
And so why would somebody, you know, at the Globe and Mail, and they don't even look at self-published books to review, or so, you know, it's, you have to be really creative. I've had to be extremely, I've had to use a lot of ingenuity just to get it out there. And so I just do one thing a day, one little action step a day to see if I can, you know, connect. That's really my thing, is I want to connect with people. So it's, if I think about, I have to sell books, I just hate myself and I hate everybody else. Mm-hmm. But if I think about, like, I want to connect, and this book is connecting, not with everybody, but it is connecting with people, then I'm like, oh, who can I make a connection with? That is way more motivating and way more interesting to me.
No, absolutely. If someone wants to buy the book, oh my God, and I suggest that you do go out and buy it, where would they find it?
So locally, shop local, you can buy it in Port Hope at Furby House Books.
Fabulous. You can buy it. Way to go, Alex.
Yes, thank you. You can buy it at Let's Talk Books in Cobourg.
Love it.
You can buy it at Chapters in Peterborough.
Oh.
And you can buy it online at Chapters or Amazon or Smashwords or iBooks. Like, it's everywhere online, in Kindle version and in print. And those are your options. And if you missed all that, just go to my website, celiamcbride.com. I have all the links there for you.
Perfect. Guys, absolutely. It is a good story. It is the truth. And you know what? Real stories are the best stories.
Mm.
I'm sorry, because you can't make up this stuff.
No, this is pretty raw, some in parts.
You're very honest and open about a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm pretty honest about the way things have gone in my life. And yeah, I also feel like I want to inspire you. So I take you on a journey.
Thank you for taking us on that journey. Okay, so I got to do those commercial things again, because I always forget commercials. So we're going to go throw in a couple of commercials, and then we're going to come back and we're just going to talk about anything we want.
Yay.
Because we are women and that's what we do. Hello, we are back with Celia McBride, author and a whole bunch of other artistic stuff, and traveler of the world.
Yes.
It feels like. So you've traveled quite a bit, but Port Hope seems to be your place.
It's funny. I feel like the Yukon is my place, but here I am. Like, I think now that I've been here, so I lived in Port Hope in the early 2000s, and I live here again. I've been here since 2016. And so it is my place. Like, Port Hope for sure is my place. And the Yukon is definitely my spiritual home. But there's something about Port Hope. I keep coming back here. Mm-hmm. And this time I never thought I would stay for, like, how long's that been? For 7 years now.
Yeah. Well, there was the 2 years of a pandemic. Do we consider that 2 years? Yeah, it's a 2-year pandemic.
Is it? I think about it as 3 years, but I guess.
It's all of 2020. Yes. Oh, no, it is 3 years.
It's 3.
All of 2020, all of 2021, all of 2022. That was 3 years.
Yeah.
Did you do a lot of writing during the pandemic?
Yeah. Yeah, I did a lot of rewriting. That was kind of like, I was rewriting and moving into publishing. That's exactly what I was doing.
I have to say, it was hard for self-employed people during the pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't have structure. We had to create our own structure.
Yeah, yeah.
I know, because we do retail, and it was just so hard to get my butt into the shop
right.
So I can do delivery. That's how I learned where I live.
Mm.
Because we offered delivery, and me and my husband would have a little Google map, and
discovered Northumberland County.
We did not realize how big Northumberland County was. That was the big thing,
because
we offered free delivery.
Oh wow.
Across Northumberland County.
So you could be driving to, like,
Campbellford. Oh my God. Yeah, everything. Yeah, it's big. I don't know how these politicians and, like, also, like, our warden, I'm having her on the air too.
Oh, cool.
Mandy Martin.
Nice.
I think she's in June. But
Yeah, just so, like, it's so big. It's so vast.
Yeah.
The rolling hills.
The rolling hills. Somebody asked me, who lives in Toronto, was like, okay, Celia, like, top three reasons why you're living in Port Hope. And I said, the lake, the countryside, and the quiet.
Yeah. I mean, do you live near the lake or the countryside?
Ish.
Or in the middle?
I mean, Port Hope is like...
Everything's the lake.
Yeah.
Everything's lake. I get confused in Port Hope.
Do you?
Yes, because I'm on Walton Street in Port Hope. Right. I have my business on Port Hope. But I keep thinking towards Mill Street is south and Toronto Road is north.
Oh, funny.
Because I forget that the lake's behind me.
South is the lake. That's...
No, south is the lake.
That's how I grew up in Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me, what were your landmarks? Because I had landmarks for north, south, east, west.
South is the lake. Like,
south
that's about
was
it.
The lake. And then
that's
I always
all
went,
I had.
Oh, see, I can't figure. I have to double check my hands still to figure out which one's right and left.
That makes sense.
But I used to always say, so the airport is west.
Oh, I wouldn't have known that.
And then I'd say the lake is south.
Yeah.
My grandmother's house is north. And my Fringe Mila's house was east because she lived
that's
in
good.
Like, east
that's good.
That's how I kind of figured out my north south because I could never figure out which direction to say never eat shredded wheat, which is like the most random thing. But
I know, but I still use it. Never eat shredded wheat.
Yeah. And, you know, I lived in the Beaches for a little while.
Oh, nice.
Not the same compared to down here.
Hmm.
I think it's not quieter, but it's just not as hectic.
Yeah.
If that, you know, there's a lot of noise still, even though the beach is quiet, there's so much noise.
In the city, for sure.
Yeah. So, but in your book, you talk about living at your parents' house for a while there. Mm-hmm. So you had one of those houses on Dorset.
Mm-hmm.
Were there ghosts?
You know what?
I need to, like, because you're going through, you're talking about the spiritual thing. So,
yeah, I volunteered for the Big Brothers and Big Sisters,
mm-hmm.
and I had a little sister at the time, and she, now I think I'm making this story up, either she saw somebody in the window,
mm-hmm.
or she knew a story that someone had seen somebody in the window. So I don't know about that. I have no real sense, but sometimes there was like presence in the house, which is like just presence. I don't know what that is.
I totally know what that is.
Yeah.
It's like when I'm, because I'm in the, I tell everybody that everybody must know, I dox myself. I tell everybody everything about me. But I'm in the St. Lawrence buildings on Walton Street. That's one of the first hotel. It's the first hotel out here. Mm. So it's over 225 years old.
Wow.
But I will be sitting there and no doors open, but I will look up to see who walked in because I can just feel people coming in. And I just, I just picture my shop was a saloon and men would come in and the doors would swing open and then like ladies, like, you know, bar wenches or what were they called, like the little, you know, the bartenders and all that stuff and the hustle and bustle and the dirty roads and then fancy people getting ready for the opera house next door.
It's cool to think about that, isn't it? Like, there's so much history here.
There is. There is so much history. And some of the houses are stunning.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the stories are beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Port Hope is a little bit more well-preserved than Cobourg, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not sure. I some of the houses in Cobourg are... Oh, so old and beautiful.
Well, I have an old house. It's like a little cottage. Mm. It's a cottage house. It's 1861. We got one of those signs.
Wow. Nice.
So for those of you that don't know, when Canada turned 150, and I'm using quotes here.
Air quotes.
You would get if your home was built pre-Confederation, you would get a sign on your lawn saying this was standing in 1865.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those signs.
Yeah, so yeah. We have one of those. And I remember getting so mad because no one put a sign. I'm like, who do you have to know in this town to get one of those signs?
Did you get one eventually?
Yeah, I just came home and it showed up.
That's good.
There was a whole committee that knew where to go.
Oh, that's awesome.
And my neighbors were very jealous that we got one and they didn't. They missed out by 4 years.
Yeah, this is a special area. It is. It's got so much going for it. And I love the proximity to Toronto and I love the distance from Toronto. It's like kind of perfectly located.
It's like, what, an hour and 15 minutes to get to? Well, for me, it's...
Without traffic.
I know.
Feel for the people that commute. I do. Because it's not an hour and 15 minutes in the morning.
We need the train back.
Yeah, what's up with that?
We need the Via Rail train back. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, honestly, even just getting to the airport is a nuisance. Like, I mean, it was $500 round trip to get to the airport.
You're kidding.
It's $250 each way if you pay by credit card.
That's, what you mean for like a limo?
Yeah. $250 each way. I mean, I don't know if...
That's crazy.
I know, because my flight, I remember trying to book something, and it was going to be like, this was 2 years ago, $425 to get from here to the airport and back. And I'm like, I paid $399 for my flight. Yeah. It can't cost me more.
No.
To
That seems very expensive.
It is. It is, because gas is very expensive right now.
Yeah.
Because I took a taxi from the airport. Like, I was in Mexico last month. I got really bad food poisoning.
Oh, dear.
And the only way to get home is through taxi. And it was like $275.
I paid $170. So I don't know. That's, it sounds like
I'm getting ripped off.
Yeah.
But I was also really sick. I had no, like.
Well, but it is true. It is true. Like, if you have the time and you can take the train and the up, and it's so much cheaper. But
I actually like taking the train.
Yeah, me too.
It is so, like, it's a lost form of transportation.
It is. It's very civilized. It's very nice. It brings back memories too of, like, I used to travel between Toronto and Montreal by train.
Did you? Yeah. I never took the train. I never left Toronto. I didn't have courage. Really? When I was like, in that time frame, like when you're doing all these things, I would like literally, like, I remember my dad, I told him I'm going to go to broadcasting school. And he's like, I think I was like 22. And I said, you know what? I'm done with university. I'm going to go take radio and television. And I just laugh at this because my dad's like, you need to go become a reporter at the war. And I'm like, Dad, I sleep with the light on still. I'm not going to Afghanistan or Iraq. I can't remember. But, I never had that. Like, I wanted to, but I was such a chicken.
Yeah. It's this question of, like, where does courage come from? And I think like, some of the things I did that seem sort of that you're calling courageous, I don't know. Like, what is that that makes a person get up and do something? Like, what is it that makes a person say, like, I'm going for it, you know? And I think a lot of my life I was motivated by like a desire to succeed, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's like the best reason to do something, because if I was equating my success with outside validation, it's probably, you know, an indication of low self-esteem. Nevertheless, it motivated me. I was honestly motivated to do stuff because I wanted some kind of success. And, you know, I think I've changed my definition of success nowadays. Mm-hmm. But yeah, where does that like adventuresome, just do it. Don't be afraid. You and Signe were talking about that on the episode I just listened to, like your last third of life, and just like, you don't have a lot of time left. Start doing the things you're afraid of now.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, is that as I got older, I got more courage.
Mm.
You know, I'm still not jumping out of a plane. I'm not doing the CN Tower outside walk, whatever that's called, the crazy walk. That's what I call it.
Right. The crazy walk.
But I have no problem being honest and authentic. And, you know, if I don't agree with something, I'm going to tell you I don't agree. If I believe in something, I'm going to go out there and fight for it. Mm-hmm. There's lots of things. Like, this sounds so silly, but if you're going to be mean to me on Facebook, I'm going to block you. Hmm. I don't need you. It's not because I don't agree, because I can disagree with you, because there's lots of people I don't agree with.
Yeah.
But when you become personal and attack me, I don't need that. Mm-hmm. I want to have thoughtful, insightful conversations.
Yeah.
I want to be challenged by someone else's perspective.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
What I'm not okay with is calling me names.
Mm-mm. Bye-bye.
Exactly.
I did jump out of a plane.
Did you? Oh my God.
I was 16.
Okay.
We lied to like, we got again, like 90s. We didn't have to, nobody asked for our ID when we signed the waiver saying we were 18 years old. But me and my friend drove up to, I don't know, somewhere north of Toronto.
Oh, I totally know where you went.
And took like an 8-hour course and then jumped out of a plane at 2,800 feet and 16 years old.
By yourself or did you tandem?
No, by myself.
Oh my God.
But it wasn't skydiving, which is like free fall. It was static line. So you jump out of the plane, your parachute is attached to a static line as you go, and then you jump, and then in less than 5 seconds, your chute opens for you, and then you're falling through the air with your chute. That's different than skydiving. It's called parachuting.
Okay.
So I went parachuting. And then I always wanted to go skydiving. I was like, why? What would it feel like to like fall from you just fall and never hit the ground? I don't have the courage anymore. But now you can do it in like Whitby. You can go to like iFly or something.
Yeah. But then I'm always scared someone's going to turn off air.
That's more scary, actually.
I'm more afraid of my mortality, like losing that, like being like, I'm aware that I'm no longer immortal.
Right.
You
mean you're afraid to die?
Yes.
Okay.
I've already explained to my husband. They tell you to pull the plug, just keep me alive. They're coming up with a cure.
Oh, wow.
I'm just like that right now in my life.
Right.
However, I don't dwell on it. Like, I don't just sit there and say anything. But I make it clear every once in a while if we're watching a show or something happens, you know. But I'm more aware of that. And I think because of that, because I know that I'm, you know, time is going along, I just trying to do whatever I can.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like before you got here, I got triggered by something that was said about me in the media, not local media. We're not talking Northumberland stuff, but just something that's been the bane of my existence for 7 years. And it triggered me. But I'm glad I didn't do the interview because I have to get to the point where it's okay for people to say things about me because I know my truth and my truth is what's important. And at the end of the day, I'm not sleeping with that reporter that I didn't reply to their email.
Right. Yeah.
I am sleeping with me.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's my thoughts and someone else's opinion of me is none of my business.
It's so true. And being misunderstood is one of the hardest things to move through. So we can do this great thing that says what other people think of me is none of my business. We can do this great thing, four agreements. Don't take anything personally. Those are incredible tools and we need them and they work. But that for me, I know when someone like thinks badly of me or misunderstands me or says something about me that, you know, is what I feel untrue, I have to take care of that little part of myself that is so hurt. Like, I have to take care of that, you know, little Celia who got made fun of in grade 3 because she brought a giant zucchini from her grandfather's farm for show and tell and got laughed at.
Oh my
like,
goodness.
That's the kind of thing. It's like, you're right. What other people think of me is none of my business. And there's maybe a little part of me that's hurt and I need to tend to her.
Yeah, I think for me, it's more that no one's hearing me. No one's giving me an like in this situation that we're talking about is that whatever I say is tainted and I can't change that. I can't change someone else's tainting of me. I can only be me. I can treat other people the way I want to be treated. And that's the big thing for me that I've tried to do is treat people the way I want to be treated. And you know what? If I'm not good for you, you need to walk away from me. That's why I'm walking away from you.
Boundaries, good boundaries.
Yeah, and I'm okay. Like, I dwell on things. Like, I but I need to, that's my process. I need to, like, hyper focus on something, like, build a dossier on my enemies, my perceived enemies. Right. I will know everything that I need to know and then just file that away.
Right. Yeah. I have a friend who she imagines, like, tying up the thing with, you know, in a little package, puts a ribbon on it, and then watches it float away with a balloon, ties a balloon to it, and then watches it float away. And I'm like, that's a good trick. That's a good tool.
Oh, so
watch it float away.
For me, I used to imagine I was being interviewed by David Letterman, and I'm able to explain my side of the story.
That's
and I have
great.
This huge, David Letterman's no longer around, but I always imagine myself in these situations when I feel that I'm not being heard is being interviewed by someone so I can be able to think, and then I'll fall asleep to that, and I fall asleep to me being interviewed.
That's great. I've done that. We're very similar that way. I've done that for more to like be famous than voicing my upset. I used to fantasize about being interviewed by famous people.
Oh, I love it. I also fantasize interviewing famous people because that'll help me become famous. And it's 8:58.
We did it.
Oh my God, Celia, this was so much fun. So again, guys, you can go buy Celia's book. You can buy it at Furby House in Port Hope. Let's Talk Books in Coburg. Chapters in Peterborough. You can go to Amazon and type in "Oh my God," it's O. That's it. My God. Or go to Celia's website, celiamcbride.com, and you can go do that. It's all about supporting local. Read. You can read her story. I guarantee you. Like, I'm halfway through and I already have inspirational moments.
Thank you.
And just go there. And I want to say thank you for coming in. Thank you for finding us.
Thank you for having me, Maria. Thanks for doing what you do for women in Northumberland.
Oh,
truly.
It's my pleasure. I get to meet so many incredible people and I'm inspired every Monday.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yay for us.
And also you can follow Celia on Instagram at Celia McBride. And then from there, you can find all the other kind of.
Yeah. You can find
all my
Oh My God page and my Facebook page and.
Yeah. And if you're not
following my website.
Perfect. And if you're not following me, you can follow me at Northumberland Women. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. And we are out of here. And that's a wrap. Thank you for taking the time to listen to Northumberland Women. If you want to catch up on any of our past episodes, head over to the station's website, northumberland897.ca, and click on the podcast button. That's where you can find us under Northumberland Women. If you have a chance, follow us on social media at Northumberland Women. We love feedback, and we'd love to hear yours. If you have any feedback or suggestions for future shows, drop us a line and let us know what you think. You can message us on social media or send us an email, hello@northumberlandwomen.com. Until next time, stay curious, ask questions. Listen to the answers and keep exploring the world around you. We'll be back next week with some more great content, so be sure to tune in then. Thanks for listening and make it your best week yet.